You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.
With UPS, Future You gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future You goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.
You're listening to The V-Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
It's a great pleasure here on this holiday weekend to welcome in one of the most talented voices in the business. You guys probably know him from his play-by-play work, and now more and more, of course, from the work he is sharing behind the microphone from the basement of his morning partner, Mark Packard. Is Wes Durham, who joins us right now as a part of the Packer and Durham show. First of all, but that's not why. He's also the play-by-play voice for football and basketball in the ACC. But, you know, it's alphabetical. It should be Durham and Packer, first of all. Who's your agent? That's what I want to know.
Well, it's an excellent point. You know, I've got to tell you a quick story because you'll appreciate this more than most. About 2 weeks ago, a guy called. Well, we had two guys call. One said, nothing like seeing Junior and Junior get to do a show together. Hilarious. And then the second guy called and said, boy, I know your dads ought to be happy, you know, ought to be really proud looking down from heaven. Well, of course, you know, my dad died about 2 years ago, 18 months ago. Billy is alive and well. And Bob, Mark turned it into a bit. He actually called his mom on a cell phone while we were sitting there to make sure that Billy was okay. I mean, just an absolute scream. So, oh, no, man. We are having a good time. Packer and Durham is fine because if we ever get in trouble, it's probably going to be from something he does. So that's good. I'll just I'll ride behind that wave.
All right. I always like to give people a little inside baseball. That if you watch the old sitcom, as many people did, it was very popular. The TV show Frasier. They used to feature a little dog on the show that was Frasier's dad's dog called Eddie, and the father's tremendously devoted to the dog on the show. We find out later the father has since passed that. The father couldn't stand the dog in real life. Couldn't stand him. So
right. You
have two dogs that are adorable and cute, and they're Packers dogs. And as a company man, you have to say you love them. But honestly, are they pains in the ass?
at times, the little one, Chester is the one that runs the show now. I mean, he runs the whole damn house. Fuller, I got to tell you, Packer feeds these damn dogs like they're kings. I mean, they eat better than most middle Americans, okay? And you know how that is with dogs, Bob. You feed dogs the wrong thing, you know how it goes, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so there, every once in a while, it gets kind of toxic, to be honest with you. And so I look at Packer and I'm like, what did you feed Fuller last night? Oh, we had pasta with red wine. I'm like, he ate pasta? Oh, he loves it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, that's perfect.
So, no, they're great dogs. In fact, it was funny. I was telling my wife and my in-laws here in Cartersville, Georgia, where I live, that we were the other day, and I guess this is coming out. I'm probably sharing state secret here. They came and spent time. They had a videographer and everybody shooting the dogs. Like the other day, I'm like, Pack always says they're the stars of the show. Well, they're doing like some, you know, post-production on the dogs. I'm thinking, Pack, this show's got our name on it, and they're here doing the dogs. But, hey, man. Hey, Bob, you know how this goes. It's a little bit like coaching. You know, if everybody likes it, just keep going, right? Yeah.
And you know, all respect, as long as the checks don't bounce. That's the big story.
Shows up once a week. Let's hope it keeps coming.
Wes Durham is with us. Of course, for the people who don't know, his dad was the legendary Woody Durham, who was an icon in the ACC many, many years for, I guess, what, 40 years at Chapel Hill as the voice of North Carolina?
40 years. Yeah, and before that, he did the original ACC television package with C.D. Chesley. So, yeah, in basketball.
Wow.
So,
and, of course.
My old man was the best. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, Marty Brenneman, who you know well, of course, and Marty this past year retired as the voice of the Reds, and I had a chance to spend some time with he and Amanda when they were here in Atlanta during August, and I said, and he said, you know, your old man was great. I said, well, I appreciate that. I go, you've had a hell of a run, too. He goes, yeah, but your old man was great. I'm like, easy, Marty, easy. Okay. So,
and Marty's the best. There are a handful of guys, you included, I wish at some point I get to do a game with. He's one of them. I would love to do.
Oh, Marty. Yeah, we'd have a blast, wouldn't we?
We would have a good time. Marty, of course, yeah. I quote his every once in a while at the end of a game when it's been relatively close and one team starts to, you know, break it open, and Marty would say, the train is pulling out of the station. I always remember that. So he was doing basketball.
Oh, yeah.
So we still catch phrases from each other. But anyway, you've grown up in this league, and you're as good a guy as any to ask about this because of your experience. You're broadcasting not only in the league, of course, you were at Georgia Tech, and football in the ACC is in most people, I think, across the country's perception, probably always going to take a backseat to basketball. But in terms of administrators and for the checks, football, you know, in a lot of ways really dictated what went on in college sports with the realignments of the leagues and everything else. And so in this league, it's no different. Football has a great sense of importance. But right now, there is such a huge gap between the team at the top and everybody else. First of all, is that unprecedented? And secondly, do you see that changing any time in the near future with Clemson and everybody else?
Well, I think, first of all, let me say this. I have said this throughout the fall, and I've said it to a lot of people nationally. And, you know, Louisville's obviously been in the league a handful of years here, so I'll share it with you. This is an entirely different dynamic of football dominance that we're seeing from Clemson than what we saw from Florida State in the early 90s. And I feel compelled to say that to people because I think the ACC was playing catch-up in the early 90s. When Florida State came in this league and went, now remember, they went 70-2 in their first 9 years.
Wow.
In the league. Okay. In conference play, they went 70-2 in their first 9 years. I mean, it's just, it's almost like a misprint, but that's what happened. And I tell people that because I think it's important to understand that since Florida State arrived in this league, and we went through the first wave of expansion that included Virginia Tech and Syracuse and BC. The second line of expansion, obviously Pittsburgh and Louisville was there. Notre Dame comes in on what I call the IPO, things of that nature. Football has changed. It's night and day difference. First of all, resources, infrastructure, financials, facilities, all those things are very different than they were, you know, let's say 20 years ago, 20-some years ago when Florida State first came in the league. However, that being said, Clemson has gone next level where only realistically one other team, perhaps two or three, exists. Certainly Alabama's there. I think you can throw Ohio State in there now. And then you can mix or match a team in or out of that circle depending on the year. I'm very excited about where the ACC is. I think that the coaching moves of about 10 years ago certainly set the table. Then the most recent coaching moves in the last 5 years, I think, also helped buoy the league. It's just so happened that we are cycling out of quarterbacks. We cycled out of Deshaun Watson, Mitch Trubisky, guys like that a few years ago, and we're cycling back through where the best quarterbacks in the league are relatively younger guys. We've still got defensive talent in the league. We've got excellent coaches in the league. We haven't been able to get the non-conference win besides a team like Clemson that would define the league's improvement, Bob, and I think that's what's probably caused maybe the bigger issue nationally where you see Virginia Tech going to the back end of the playoff poll this week. I think the league's probably better than people think, but it's not had a great year nationally, and that's been the bigger issue it's been fighting, I think.
It is a fascinating story, though, and belabor the point about, but you are so well suited to talk about that part of it when we look at it from a historic point of view. I mean, what Dabo's done at Clemson is rather amazing. I mean, he's turned them into such a dominant force, and when he really started this run, they were your generic run-of-the-mill Power 5 team, really, weren't they? I mean, I know they had some success in the past.
No question.
But they were nothing special, right?
No. In fact, when he was in the interim coach in 2008, I mean, I'm of the belief that if he doesn't beat South Carolina at the end of that year, he's not getting the job. I mean, you know, and I'll take it to another level. They lose to West Virginia in the Orange Bowl and give up 60-some points, you know, in the Orange Bowl. And I think the defining moment, and I told him this, I think the defining moment of whatever happened to Clemson University for Dabo Swinney was that when they gave up the 60-some points to West Virginia in the Orange Bowl, he refused to let that game define his program at Clemson.
Mm.
You know, they came back the next year, and I told Taj Boyd this. Taj Boyd completes a 4th-and-1,000 play against LSU in the Peach Bowl the next year in Atlanta. And Clemson goes on to beat LSU. And I told Taj, if you don't complete that pass, I think we're talking about an entirely different story right now. And I do believe, and you know this, I mean, we've all been around coaches and sports all our lives in some respect. It can be as simple as one play. And I think Taj Boyd to Nuke Hopkins is the most important play in Clemson football. It's more important than Watson to Hunter Renfrow. It's more important than the butt kicking they put on Alabama last year in Santa Clara. I think if they don't win the Peach Bowl the next year, we're talking about an entirely different thing. Dabo, and he's as good as it gets at finding an edge. I mean, that whole Roy bus and all that stuff, and I mean, he loves the fact they're three. I'm telling you, if I know him like I think I do, he loves the fact they're third in the poll, because he does not want anybody to give them any kind of incentive or advantage that they're the best out there. Because, and I've had several players tell, Eric McClain works with us now on ACC Network, and Eric says that the stories you hear about practice are absolutely true. The most important piece of what Clemson's success is that their practices are a hell of a lot harder than the games.
Talking to Wes Durham, as I mentioned at the very top of this little segment with him, you can catch him on SiriusXM, the ACC radio network there, with his co-host Mark Packer. They'd been doing the show on Sirius before it kind of got rolled out as part of the ACC new programming. It was called the ACC This Morning, and it has had great success, and I'm sure you will enjoy it if you've not tuned in here. Two things before we get off the football topic. One is Florida State. First of all, is it true that Willie Taggart never had signed a contract? Is that really the truth, or is that just scuttlebutt?
No, I haven't heard that. I mean, if he hadn't signed a contract, why'd they go raise a reported, you know, $1 billion to get rid of him? I don't know. That's the first I've heard of that. I don't know that he didn't sign a contract, but whatever happened there, it just never seemed to work, and that's unfortunate for Willie, obviously, as the coach, but at the same time, it also set Florida State back a little bit, too, for sure.
What are they going to do, do you think?
I don't know. I think it's – Mark has said this on the show, and I agree with him, Bob. It's really about fit at Florida State. It really is about a guy that understands who Florida State is, what Florida State is, and how they go next level. I'm of the belief that if Odell Hagans – if somebody says Odell Hagans deserves to be the coach, I think he's a perfect fit in terms of a guy that loves Florida State, been on staff 29 years. People say, well, he's not a head coach. Well, how do we know? I mean, did somebody say that, you know, Coach X is not a head coach at school Y? I mean, look, Kendall Briles is an offensive wizard. I can tell you about this is Kendall Briles put Jordan Travis in the game once Willie Taggart left, and Jordan Travis has three of the biggest plays made by quarterbacks in the history of Florida State. Okay, so I think Kendall Briles knows what's going on. I think they were pretty good defensively for most of the year. I don't know. Is it a name job? Sure it is. But you and I both know, too, that at some point somebody's got to start, you know, the accounting process in the books, right? I mean, how much money do you really have? And who's calling the shots in the program? And then there's this outlier situation real quick where there's a rumor that the president, the athletic director, and the president of Seminole Boosters are all going to retire in the next 18 months.
Mm.
So, quite frankly, if that's the case, then why would a known coach be willing to come to work at a place where he's being hired by people that are going to be gone in a year and a half and he's going to be standing there?
That's a great point.
I tell you what's not going to surprise me if the new coach signs a 6 or 7 year deal, because I think the new guy going in there is going to get a long term deal. Now, I don't think he's going to be one of the highest paid coaches, but I think he's going to get a deal that's 6 or 7 years to have a little staying power for sure. Because Florida State's got to invest in one thing Florida State's not used to, and that's patience.
Well, that's true. I mean, perfect example, your explanation about Dabo. I mean, think about that. One play away probably from being bounced.
Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable. We're talking to Wes Durham here, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, because certainly around here, and with good reason in my opinion, I probably had the point I'm making is how much fun people have had and how much they're admiring the job that Scott Satterfield's done. I probably had more fun watching this football season locally than maybe even their big, 10-win seasons and some of the big years in the past, because it was so unexpected.
Sure.
And he seems like such a genuine guy. And I don't know how familiar you were with him when he was at App State. I certainly didn't know him at all. But, boy, he has just been the perfect guy at the perfect time for this program. What about the job they've done this year?
Well, he's done a remarkable job. He is an incredible talent in the coaching industry. I was thrilled when Vince Tyrae gave him the opportunity to be the coach at Louisville. I've had the good pleasure to spend the fall working with Eric Wood, who obviously played at Louisville and is in the Hall of Fame this past October. And Eric and I have shared a lot of, I've always thought Scott was gifted because Scott Satterfield took over a hard job. I mean, remember now, Jerry Moore was no joke coaching FCS football at Appalachian, right?
Right.
And Scott took over that program and guided them in the transition from FCS to FBS into the Sun Belt. And Appalachian was successful. If you don't think they're successful, hell, they're successful this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a really, really good football coach. And then I know he brought some guys with him from Appalachian, but he was also bringing guys like Gunnar Brewer to his staff. And Gunnar Brewer's a heck of a football coach. So Dwayne Ledford's a hell of a football coach. I mean, all those things count. And so I'm excited about where Louisville's going. They're still a relatively young football team too, Bob.
Yeah, he's got some key guys back. He really does.
Oh, no question. And, I mean, he may lose Becton to the draft and things like that, but, I mean, he's going to have young guys on defense. He's going to have skilled guys on offense that are going to come back. He's got great situation at quarterback. So I fully, and just this is a personal opinion now, I don't have any inside trader information on this, I fully expect him to be the ACC coach of the year next week.
Well,
I think he's
he ought to be
in serious contention for national coach of the year, but I understand why people may lean to Matt Rhule at Baylor and P.J. Fleck at Minnesota along those lines, but there's no doubt he's done a sensational job.
Now, I was just going to say that you're right. I mean, especially if they beat Kentucky. I mean, the fact we're talking about them having gotten bowl eligible with 3 weeks still to go in the season. I mean, I said I thought they'd win 4 games this year, and people thought I was crazy here because I said, how optimistic do you have to be? Because that's how atrocious they really were last year. You know that. You were doing the games. I mean, you saw
it. Oh, yeah, they
game.
Were. Well, they sacked the bats. I mean, let's be honest.
They did.
They sacked the bats pretty quick on the Petrino administration. And, in all honesty, the pick against Florida State probably ended the year. From that point on, I didn't think they had a lot of interest. And I'm not sure, and I still see some of the coaches on that staff through other positions now. And I'm not quite sure the locker room was as connected as Scott came in. And again, here's where we talk about Dabo and the early years at Clemson, right? How important was the work that was done in the spring with Sat and Louisville, right? I mean, that to me is where those kids understood, hey, wait a second, this guy cares about us as players, cares about us as people, wants to connect with us on a daily basis. He's got coaches that care. We're going to run an entertaining offense. We're going to be competitive. And, if other guys went to the transfer portal or they left the program or whatever the case may be, he's going to coach the guys that are here and not worry about the guys that aren't here. And that's, again, a tremendous statement about him as a person. And I'm excited to see what he does. I'm not one of these guys that thinks he's going to take, Clemson down next year. But I think he's got the ingredients to build a really, really solid foundation that can help Louisville have sustainability as they move forward in football.
Wes Durham's with us. Let's shift gears into basketball here before we get to some teams and forecasts and everything else. The tournament goes back to Greensboro, and obviously when you have history with this league, you know what Greensboro means to the league. To Jim Boeheim, it means, you know, basically like going to hell for a couple of days, but to others, they don't see it that way. I understand, I mean, going to other cities, but Greensboro's place in the ACC lore is important. I mean, if you talk to some people, they say, "Heck, I don't care about the, you know, how the city the league has grown. We should be going to Greensboro every year." I'm not sure we go to that point, but you know the point I'm making. How much some people do have an emotional connection there. What do you make of long term Greensboro as a future venue for tournaments? I know they're booked pretty far out, but you think it's something they should make a concerted effort to do more so, less so? How do you feel it fits into the picture?
This tournament has turned into a very interesting event for the ACC because Charlotte was such a success for football and has been such a success for football. I think Greensboro is in a rotation. Now, the rotation is going to be pretty interesting. And I didn't – the only tournament I haven't been to since 1995 was, I guess, 4 years ago when it was in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And Washington stood the place on its ear. I mean, they had just a marvelous event.
They really did.
Capital. Yeah, I mean, it was just great. And it changed dynamically from 4 years ago to when it was there in 2005, because I happened to be at the 2005 event. I'm not sure the city had much of a heartbeat for it. But you'll know what I mean because of Jimmy and NC State and all this. The center point of this league has moved kind of north.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, Washington is a lot closer to the rest of the league than maybe, say, Greensboro was, right? I mean, we've had more schools that are Pittsburgh, Notre Dame, Syracuse, obviously, BC. So when we go in 05 to DC the first time, it's kind of foreign territory. Now when you go back, It's a little more receptive from a marketplace than maybe it was in 2005. So I understand where Greensboro fits. Greensboro is historical. It's where the league was born. Obviously, it's Sedgefield Country Club in that city in the early 1950s. I think Greensboro will always have a spot. It's not as sexy as Brooklyn, Atlanta, Charlotte, D.C., you know. And I'm one of these guys, too, Bob. I'll just share this with you quickly. I'm one of these guys that when we went to Tampa in 07, I said, that means we can go anywhere once, okay? So I'm not opposed to Boston. I mean, people look at me when I say Boston like I've got nine eyes, and I go, no, we go to Boston once, we can go to Pittsburgh once, we'll go to Miami. I'll go anywhere once. And that theory kind of was bore out in Brooklyn because I think going to Brooklyn surprised a lot of people. Yeah, it was different. But at the same time, it was a great venue. It was a competitive situation. Brooklyn appreciated having it. You could see the emergence of the borough itself. But I'm excited to go back to Greensboro because we haven't been there in a few years. It is historical. There is tailgating. It's the only ACC tournament venue that has tailgating. And people, Louisville people love to tailgate, so they shouldn't have an issue here. But it's unique, and it's a big building now. It's 23,000 seats. And you know this from around the other venues we go to. 23,000 is a large building now for most of these college basketball events.
Yeah, it is. But I agree with everything you said. The only thing I'm not sure you would disagree, you shouldn't really address it, but the first year I got to do the ACC tournament, I think was one of the first years anyway, it may not have been the first year, was in Atlanta. And that was, in my opinion, the worst experience I had. It was like they didn't even know we were there. I mean, you go to a pro town, you roll the dice. And so when we went to Atlanta, and I thought it was very, very insignificant on the radar, when they said they were going to Washington, I said, well, that's going to be even worse. They don't even have a team in Washington. But it wasn't. As you said, Wes, for some reason, the people there this last go-round really embraced it. The city got behind it. It had a real vibe that and Brooklyn, the same thing. I was, as much as I love New York, I was skeptical, but that wound up being a really good venue as well. So
yeah, and I think that's why Brooklyn and Washington and Greensboro and Charlotte, and I'm not going to eliminate Atlanta because obviously I've been in the market since 95. I didn't think Atlanta and Phillips Arena was the right fit the last time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure Mercedes-Benz is the right venue either. Now, they have refurbished and renovated Phillips Arena. Obviously, it's now called State Farm Arena. And it's a fantastic showplace. I think you've got to be particular and I say particular and careful about the pro arenas you go into. And you know what I mean by that. You can go into the – look, KFC Yum Center to me is one of the most dynamic buildings in the ACC, but it's not your traditional pro arena, right?
Right.
I mean, it's a college field building. You've got to go into buildings that are more like KFC Yum Center as opposed to buildings that have, you know, massive amounts of suites where people are distracted from the game. The ACC tournament is an engaged event. It's not an event where you stand up in a suite and talk to a bunch of guys. Oh, by the way, that guy just scored on a breakaway.
right.
You know, I think Atlanta got a little lost in that. I thought Brooklyn might have been guilty of that, but it came around more in year two than year one. And Greensboro is definitely an engagement building because there are not a lot of suites in that building. And I think people from Louisville, if they haven't been to Greensboro, are really going to be impressed with, number one, the hospitality in the city. But number two, the intensity of the basketball, especially the deeper we go. And, you know, the Cards are pretty daggone good, so that's going to help their cause as well.
Speaking to that point, not surprising, kind of business as usual, four teams in the four ACC teams in the top 25 in Florida State just on the outside looking in the AP poll. And it's, another strong year, but Duke goes down at home in Cameron. We've seen a lot of teams get beat early, but not in Cameron. That's, my goodness, that's unheard of. But I think it speaks to the fact, and I know maybe right now it's been said so often just into these 3-4 weeks of the season, it's becoming a bit of a cliche, but I think it's true. It doesn't look like a landscape where certainly this early in the year there are any great teams. There's a lot of good teams, and a lot of the ACC teams are those good teams, and there's no reason to think they won't be around for deep March runs. But right now, you know, I'll be honest with you, Wes, that Champions Classic in New York, it wouldn't absolutely shock me if none of those teams made the Final Four. I mean, and that's what the landscape looks like. What are your thoughts?
Totally agree with you. I think that we are in the I think we're in for a very, very entertaining college basketball season. As it relates to the league in particular, I said this to Mark on the show right as the season began. I was not going to be surprised if any of the front four, Duke, Carolina, Virginia, and Louisville, if they all took a loss in the first 6 weeks of the season before we got to Christmas. And I still feel that way. Carolina, obviously, it's had some close calls. Duke obviously loses Stephen F. Austin. Virginia had a close call with Arizona State. Vermont almost got them. I just don't see dominance where we can, carve out six or eight teams and go, well, one of these teams is going to win the national title. I don't know that we know that. I think we've got a really, really entertaining product where we've probably got, I don't know, Bob, 16 teams that may be a lot alike,
agree.
Any given night concept really is applicable this year. And I think that's good for college basketball because a little bit like football, we've been able to draw a line around, six to eight teams the last couple of years and go, one of those is going to win it. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing the ACC. I don't know how in the world Florida State's not in the top 25. They lose by 2 to Pitt on opening night, and, they beat Florida in Gainesville, which I was told Florida was pretty good, and yet that doesn't get Florida State in the top 25. And so I'm excited to see them. I think Notre Dame's going to be good. I think there's some things about the Irish that intrigue me, in addition to Mike Bray just being a hell of a coach. And I'm looking forward to seeing who else steps to the forefront. Does NC State have enough juice? I'm really impressed with what Mike Young's done at Virginia Tech. I knew he could coach. I've known him a long time. I've known him 31 years. He did a great job at Wofford. To beat Michigan State the other night in Maui was a hell of a statement. And I'm going to be really, really interested to see kind of where this league starts to fall. And I'll be honest with you, and I'm not telling you this because we're on in Louisville. I'm excited for the Cards. Oh. I think that's a fun team. Chris is a great coach. He's got a tremendous staff. I think Jordan Wara is sensational, and I'm really, really excited to watch the Cards get after it and see where this season goes for them.
Well, we are as well, as you can guess, and the season rolls on, and as you're hearing this today, of course, a little bit later on today, Louisville will be taking on Western Kentucky. It's not their first game away from the Yum Center. They played on the road in Miami to start the year. Speaking of which, how do you feel about the expanded conference schedule? You like it? Indifferent to it? What do you make of it?
Coaches hate it. I like it. I really do think the opening week added something to us. from a momentum standpoint. I was kind of excited to see what it was about. I know the coaches hate 20 games, but I don't say they hate it. I don't think
no, they hate it.
Well, Boeheim, as you would imagine, Boeheim a little more boisterous than others. I'm okay with 20. But here's the one thing I'll share. Here's my little soapbox. I wish we had more congruent scheduling in all of college sports, but particularly in college football and college basketball. I just think that if we had more congruent schedules for leagues across the country, especially Power Five, I think we'd have better product. I just think there's too much flexibility where, you know, somebody plays eight games and then, you know, there's some schools in the ACC, and certainly Louisville falls in that category because they're playing Kentucky this weekend, just like Georgia Tech and Florida State and Clemson are also playing rivals.
Right.
That happen to be non-conference games. So, you know, the argument for nine is a little more difficult in the ACC than maybe it is in others. But if we had more congruent scheduling, the 20 wouldn't be so bad. But I'm excited for the 20. I understand the process. I respect it. Obviously, it's helpful to the product that I'm on with the ACC Network. But I think it's going to end up being pretty good. And to be honest with you, I think it's another thing, too, that changes kind of the dynamic of the league, which is good for all of us.
Wes, I can't thank you enough for a long visit here on this holiday weekend. Thank you so much for the time. I know our paths will cross very soon. I look forward to seeing you, my friend. Thanks so much.
Bob, so do I. Tell Paul hello. Look forward to catching up in person, okay?
All right, my man. Thank you.
You bet.
All right, we roll on here on this holiday weekend Friday, and folks, going to be a lot of numbers coming at you right now, because we are going to do both the college Sagarin ratings and the professional Sagarins in one gigantic orgy of radio numbers here. So bear with us here, but the college Sags have not proven as effective as the NFL ones. They're still over 500, but not by much. The NFL ones are still kicking butt pretty well. I think the NFL is 31-11. So if you do that on a regular basis, you're going to make yourself some dough. So these are the numbers, and we'll start with the college ones first. Only top 25 games, needless to say, and we'll also give you what they say about Kentucky and Louisville. So, in fact, we'll start with that, where Kentucky and Louisville, according to the Sagarins, Kentucky should be a two and a half point favorite. And I believe three or three and a half. What I saw last, I don't have that one. I don't have in front of me, but I think it's two and a half. So that would be a no play, by the way. Indiana is a 4.5 point favorite over Purdue on the road. So we'll see how that plays out for the local. For the local kids in the football. But as we go into the in top 25, this is what we get. These are games involving teams in the top 25, four of which are both teams are in the top 25. The other ones are just at one of the teams. A lot of them, we're very lucky here, by the way, if you're just a fan. The rivalry game here, there's only a couple of rivalry games this weekend that are traditional rivalry games that the margin is very close. There's a lot of really big one-sided spreads. Georgia's 28.5 point favorite over Georgia Tech. Clemson is 27.5 over South Carolina. Oklahoma's 2-touchdown favorite over Oklahoma State. Oregon is a 19.5 point favorite over Oregon State. Florida is a 17.5 point favorite over Florida State. So for us to get these great rivals. Now, Virginia Tech and Virginia is another close one. And that's the one we start with, where we'll give you the college Sagarins. Again, if you're unfamiliar with this, we don't do leans in college. You just have to be a 3-point favorite or more, and we take a college game. In the pros, if it's between 2 and 3, it's a lean. If it's above 3, it's a play. And as I said, the NFL, I think because the numbers are easier to compare in the NFL. There's fewer teams. There's less separation between the very best teams and the worst teams. College football is wild, and I still think the numbers are good. He still has a winning record pick in our system here, but it's not nearly as dominant as the NFL. But if you want some help in picking games, game going on right now is Virginia Tech and Virginia. And Virginia Tech is a 2.5 point favorite in that game. According to the website, that's largely based on history because they haven't lost to Virginia since like the French and Indian War. But if you go by the numbers, Virginia should actually be a 3.5 point favorite in that game. Iowa and Nebraska. Iowa is a 5.5 point favorite on the road. According to the Sagarins, they should be a 9.5 point favorite. So you'd have two plays right there. You'd have both Virginia Tech and excuse me, UVA and Iowa would be plays there. Cincinnati and Memphis going at it. This is in Memphis, where Memphis is an 11.5-point favorite. They should be a 6-point favorite. I mean, this is what I mean. The college numbers are just all over the landscape. We've got three games. We already would have three plays. There are weeks we go in the NFL where we're lucky if we get two plays. And we've got all top 25 games to go here, and we've already got three games that the numbers say you should play. But, again, take everything under advisement is all I would say about that. Boise State and Colorado State. Boise State is a 12.5-point favorite. They should be a 19-point favorite. Four games in a row. Four teams you should be playing according to these numbers. App State has not fared well in these Sagarins. They would be a game right now where you wouldn't play them. They're 12.5-point favorite. They should be between 14.5 and 15. So that would be the first game out of the five. All those games are today, by the way. The other games I'll give you are Saturday games. So you'd have four plays in the first five games. The ones for Saturday, the marquee game of the weekend, Ohio State and Michigan. Ohio State is a 9-point favorite at Michigan. According to the Sagarin ratings, they should be a 10-point favorite. That's a no play. Clemson at South Carolina. I don't like the Sagarins when these games are 20-plus margins. They just seem to be wildly difficult to predict as consistently as the smaller margin games. Clemson's a 27.5-point favorite. They should be a 25-point favorite. No play. Georgia's 28.5 over Georgia Tech. Sagarins say they should be a 29.5 to 30-point favorite. That's a no play. Oklahoma's 13.5 with Oklahoma State. Oklahoma should be only a 6.5-point favorite. So according to this, you should take Oklahoma State and the points in that one. Both those teams are nationally ranked. Notre Dame goes to Stanford. Notre Dame is a 16.5-point favorite. Too many points, according to the Sagarins. The Sagarins would say no. They should be an 18-point favorite. So that's a no play. LSU's a 17-point favorite over Texas A&M. LSU should be a 16-point favorite. No play there. Iowa State, a 4.5-point favorite. They should be a 2-point favorite, not quite enough to make it a play, but a very strong lean if you want to go by leans. But, well, you don't really need to play very many leans in college. There's a whole bunch of these games that are very different to what the point spreads say. Utah, a 28-point favorite versus Colorado. They should be a 23-point favorite. That may be too many points. The Sagarins would say take Colorado and all those points. Florida against Florida State. Florida State, of course, in transition in their coaching. I don't know how much you think that translates into the numbers, but this game is right on the number. Florida's a 17.5-point favorite. They should be a 17-point favorite. Excuse me. So that would be a no play there. Another big game, two nationally ranked teams, Alabama and Auburn, go at it on the road for Alabama, 3-point favorites. They should be 7-point favorites. Of course, a lot of these numbers were accrued with Tua in the lineup, so take it with a grain of salt. But if you go by those numbers, you should take Alabama in that game. Game that I'm looking forward to, and I'm rooting, I'm to tell you the absolute truth, for Minnesota, because I don't think they've gotten anywhere near the respect they should have gotten given the work they've done this year. They take on Wisconsin at home. Wisconsin is a 2.5-point favorite. Sagarins say they should be a 5-point favorite. That's a no play, but a lean to Wisconsin. Baylor goes to Kansas. Baylor's a 14-point favorite. They should be a 19-point favorite. There's a play there for Baylor. Take Baylor and lay the points, according to the Sagarins there. There is no line on Rutgers and Penn State. So there's no line for the site that I'm looking at, but if you had to go, this is incredible. A conference game, Rutgers to Penn State. If you go by the Sagarins, Penn State should be, and I kid you not, a 40.5-point favorite. 40. Wow, Rutgers, what are you doing? Good God. Unbelievable. That's literally unbelievable. And then we wrap it up with Oregon and Oregon State. Oregon is a 19.5-point favorite at home. According to the Sagarins, they should be a 20-point favorite. 21-point favorite. That would be a no play either. So, but there's a whole lot of games on that docket that are plays. I wish you the best of luck as you try and make some money for your holiday shop.
The V Show breaks down this weekend's football matchups using the Sagarin numbers from Jeff Sagarin.
Jeff is now a franchise. His column in USA Today being joined by rankings in the Louisville Courier Journal, the Bloomington Herald Times for 27 years now, the Dallas Morning News, and other papers around the country.
For those of you wanting to bet a shekel or two,
shut up and take my money.
The V Show shows you which games to avoid.
Nope.
And which games to bet.
How much money you got?
No, Carl.
It's a proven system.
No.
You're throwing money away.
Carl, no.
Fine, stay a sucker.
Just remember,
numbers don't lie.
Here we go.
All right. The NFL, Sagrins, where we have been much better, 31-11, which is pretty solid. Again, you don't play very many games in the NFL. This week, there are four games to play, two leans. And we'll go through the slate with you right now. One is a little bit of a stretch. The Jets are a three-and-a-half-point favorite. They should be a four-and-a-half-point favorite. But based on recency, they should be an 8.5-point favorite. That would be a weak lean, especially since they're away from home. You sometimes get caught up in one big week, and then you start losing your mind. They played great last week, but if you put a gun to my head, I would say that would be a play for the Jets, but it's only a lean in our numbers here. First game to play is pick against the Giants. Green Bay, 6.5-point favorites. They should be 10.5-point favorites against the Giants in New Jersey. The Colts taking on Tennessee. The Colts are 2.5-point favorites. They should be 1 point. No play there. Philadelphia takes on the Dolphins in Miami. Philadelphia is a 10-point favorite. They should be 8.5. That's a no play. The next game, and I've got to make sure I've got this right. I think I do, because I was a little bit surprised when I saw it. But, people are jumping on the Cleveland bandwagon now. That's what the reality is. And Cleveland and Pittsburgh, again, what a bitter, ugly game it was a few weeks ago. The Browns are in Pittsburgh, and Cleveland is a 2-point favorite. The Sagrins say the Steelers should be 2-point favorites. Take it with a grain of salt, rivalry game, and, of course, Pittsburgh changing quarterbacks again. But if you go by the numbers, Pittsburgh would be the play at home, getting 2 points from Cleveland. We'll see. Cleveland is on a bit of a roll right now, so I would take that under advisement. But that is one of the games that the numbers say to play. If you go strictly by that 3-point difference or more, this is actually 4 points out of whack. Cleveland giving two, they should be, Pittsburgh should be giving two. So take the Steelers in that one. Carolina is giving 10 to Washington at home. That's exactly on the number. It should be 10. Tampa Bay on the road in Jacksonville, a battle in-state Florida. Tampa Bay is a 1-point favorite. They should be a 0.5-point favorite. So that's basically a pick 'em. That's a no play. San Francisco and Baltimore, again, the games that say plays are largely because I think the public perception, and in some cases the proper perception, is very different from what the raw numbers say. San Francisco is a 6-point underdog in Baltimore. And based on the data, I mean, San Francisco's really good, still not getting any respect. So the numbers say should take the 49ers. But based on what we just saw out of Baltimore, the people losing their minds on the Baltimore Lamar Jacksons, that Baltimore should still be favored, but they should only be favored by 2.5. And the 49ers are getting 6. That's a lot of points to give a 10-1 football team. But, again, the Ravens are rolling as well at 9-2. So take that under advisement. But that's a game that, again, the raw data says you should take the 49ers and be ahead 6-0 starting that one. The Rams in Arizona. Rams are laying 3 in Arizona. They should be given 6. The Rams, though, seem to be a team in a little bit of disrepair, and that's probably why that number's not higher. But according to their body of work, they should be 6-point favorites. That would be a play by the Sagrins. The Chargers take on Denver in Denver. They're 2.5-point favorites. They should only be 1-point favorites. That's not even a lean, but, again, maybe that if you think Denver's a better play there, maybe that persuades you a little bit, but that's what the numbers say. Kansas City hosting Oakland, that game is right on the number. Kansas City's a 10-point favorite. They should be a 10-point favorite. New England is a 3-point favorite in Houston. They should be a 4.5-point favorite. That's a no play. Seattle is a 3-point favorite over Minnesota. According to the Sagrins, they should only be, that game should be a pick-em. Or a half a point favor for Seattle. So it's a lean only because it's not quite to 3 points. It's just under 3 points. But it's a lean for Minnesota. If you don't like the Vikings, that's the last game of the week. That's the Monday night game. Take it under, again, these things are just giving you as help to round out your information. But Minnesota doesn't seem to be getting the respect they should either. Russell Wilson, largely. The Seahawks are so sexy. Hey, folks, Seattle's only one game better than the Vikings in the standings. Vikings are 8-3. Seattle's 9-2. And you're given 3 points there. Anytime you got a team that's 8-3 getting 3, or a team that's 10-1 like the 49ers, and they're getting 6, you should take a good hard look at it, at least consider it. And the numbers say this would be a lean, if not an outright play. So this is what the numbers tell you. The lean for the Vikings plus 3, a lean for the Jets minus 3.5, and then 4 games that are actually plays. I had it backwards. I think I said it was 3-3. It's 2 leans, 4 plays. Minnesota getting 3, Jets laying 3.5, the 2 leans. The plays are Green Bay laying 6.5, Pittsburgh getting 2 at home, the 49ers getting 6 on the road, and the Rams laying 3 on the road. So there's your potpourri. There's your buffet of games to make your betting meal for the weekend. I didn't know where I was going to go with that metaphor there. But nonetheless, I hope it makes you some extra shopping money for this weekend. So that's it for football. That's our Sagarin numbers, both college and NFL, here on The V Show on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
You've got ants inside the house, mosquitoes outside the house, moles burrowing in your lawn, and termites eating your house from inside out. You're completely surrounded! Luckily, OPC Pest Services has a Four Seasons program that can help. OPC has been providing quality pest services since 1972. Protect your home and property and call OPC Pest Services for a free estimate at 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com. Again, that's 969-9635 or visit opcpest.com.